Good morning. My name is Mahesh. I'm a program manager on the Azure AD team, and my team works on Windows Server AD, some parts of Azure AD, including this new service called Azure AD Domain Services, and also something called Azure AD Connect Health. There's a lot of sessions about some of these capabilities, including a session on what's new in Windows Server 2016 Active Directory tomorrow at 9 a.m. This session focuses on Azure AD Domain Services, which is a fairly new service that's currently in preview. And it helps you to essentially lift and shift your applications to the cloud without having to worry about identity. And we'll sort of walk through what the service does, how you can set it up, and some of the canonical deployment scenarios for the service in Azure. Some of the objectives for today are to introduce the service, understand how it works, and discuss the benefits of using this service as against spinning your own domain controllers in Azure. We'll walk through the features that are available in preview, and I'll give you a quick overview of how each of these capabilities works. When possible, we'll try and contrast it with running your own domain controllers in the cloud. We'll explore some scenarios where you can rely on Azure AD Domain Services, so some typical Azure deployment scenarios where you could choose to use the service instead of actually spinning up your own domain controllers. I'm going to walk you through the roadmap, some of the features that we've been asked to deliver from customers, and if you could help us prioritize maybe during the session or after the session as well, we'd really be grateful for that. It helps us evolve the service. And then finally, I hope that you can take away from this session some knowledge about how you can lift and shift applications to Azure without having to worry about the identity needs of those apps. To start off, I just wanted to introduce Azure AD. There's a lot of sessions at Ignite that talk about Azure AD, so you might have seen this slide before. For those of you who haven't, it's essentially our cloud-scale identity as a service management offering. 90% of Fortune 500 companies use the Microsoft Cloud, and Azure AD is essentially the backbone, the identity backbone for all of our Office 365 and Microsoft Azure customers. So if you're using Azure, you're essentially using Azure AD in the back end. Today, we process more than 1.3 billion authentications a day. When we combine that with our consumer-side Microsoft account authentications, it gives us a lot of insight into what customers are doing. It helps us understand anomalous logins, and then also helps us to essentially use that information and protect your identities, understand where accounts are at risk, and help you mitigate those risks. We have about 33,000-odd enterprise mobility and security, or EMS, customers who are using our capabilities today. A lot of sessions on EMS as well. This is really not the focus of this talk today. What we're going to talk about today is about a new service called Azure AD Domain Services that belongs to the Azure AD umbrella and helps you to lift and shift traditional applications to the cloud. The way we've kind of designed Azure AD is to make it really easy to connect to your on-premises directory. So we have a tool called Azure AD Connect that helps you synchronize users, groups, and passwords up to the cloud. Now, once they synchronize to the cloud, they're stored inside of your Azure AD tenant, and you can use those same identities to secure access to cloud applications like Office 365, SaaS applications, or any custom line of business applications that you develop in the cloud. We've designed Azure AD to be self-service for things like password reset. So a lot of your end users can go to Azure AD's portal, go ahead and reset their own passwords. You can configure these changed passwords to sync back to your on-premises AD and so on. And finally, the design goal of all of this is to help you secure all of your applications that are running in the cloud. And we can also now secure your on-premises applications using the Azure AD App Proxy, which is really a service that runs in the cloud, helps you publish your on-premises applications to the cloud, and then use Azure AD to secure access to those applications. So along those lines, when a lot of our customers look at options for moving applications to the cloud, we find that they fall into these three buckets. There's a bunch of applications where you can actually stop using your on-premises variant and move to the cloud by simply switching to a SaaS application. Good example of that, Office 365. So for these application categories, What we've done in Azure AD is try to make it really easy to secure those applications using Azure AD. We've got features like conditional access control that help you do things like requiring MFA or compliant devices to access these applications. So this category is interesting, but not quite what we're going to focus on today. The second category is where you can actually rewrite your existing applications. In many examples, you might actually take your application, rewrite its authentication stack, and use more modern protocols like OAuth or OpenID Connect. And at that point in time, you've essentially made your application a lot more amenable to running in the cloud. That application is now cloud native. It uses modern ways to interact with the directory, such as a graph-based REST API, which is really a REST-based API to access your directory. Or you might have changed the authentication stack itself completely to use OAuth or OpenID Connect or SAML or WSFed. Again, interesting, but not everybody has the luxury of rewriting their applications. So what we're going to focus on is this third category called lift and shift. Now, these may be applications that your organization has acquired over the years, over the decades. In some cases, ISVs might not support those applications anymore. They might not be interested in rewriting the auth stack of those applications. In some cases, it's really so critical that you can't take a downtime. You really can't take all the test effort that's involved in rewriting, testing, and certifying that application. Our goal here is to try and lift and shift these applications to the cloud so that they keep running in the cloud with minimal distractions or minimal changes or interruptions to end users. On the face of it, it looks fairly simple, but when you actually go down and actually look at what it involves, it's fairly complicated. You can actually lift and shift a bunch of your applications. You can virtualize your applications, run them in Azure Virtual Machines. But what do you do about identity? Many of these applications have dependencies on Windows Server AD. So they might run on domain join machines. You might use central admin accounts to administer these machines. You might have service accounts, which are AD accounts that are used to authenticate services inside these applications. You might use LDAP in these applications to interact with the directory. You might use a system.directory services API that's been around for a couple of decades to talk to your directory. You might use group policy to manage the servers on which these applications run. So it's fairly complicated when you think about the identity needs of these applications. It doesn't really translate to a simple lift and shift today. So when we talked to our customers, there were two widely used options. The option on your left is a VPN gateway or an ExpressRoute connection. And here what you do is get your apps to your directory. You run your apps in Azure, but you connect up your Azure virtual network to your on-premises AD. And so now these apps can continue running in the cloud, but they're going to talk to your on-premises AD. There's a variant of this where you could spin up a domain controller off your on-premises domain. So essentially, you're extending your domain in the cloud by running one of your domain controllers virtualized in Azure. Again, same concept. What you're doing is taking your on-premises AD and extending it to the cloud so your applications can keep running the way they used to. The second option is where you're essentially spinning up domain controllers in Azure. You might run this as a resource forest where you have a one-way trust back to your on-premises AD, or you might run it as a completely standalone domain and then try to sort of migrate all of the identity stuff you have on-premises and run it in that domain controller in Azure. Both of these options are good, but they involve essentially taking care of a lot of infrastructure. You have to worry about that domain controller being always up. You have to manage it, patch it, monitor it, and ensure that it's always available. So we figured there's probably a simpler alternative, and that's really the design goal behind trying to build a service like Azure AD Domain Services. We want the service to be really simple so you don't have to worry about DC promo or deploying domain controllers in the cloud. We really wanted to be more of a SaaS-like offering. We wanted to have to forget about patching domain controllers. Imagine that all of these patches are applied when patch windows roll around. If you want to actually take it to the next level, forget about having to upgrade the OS on your domain controllers. When the new release of Windows Server comes around with new capabilities in Azure, in AD, we want to essentially be able to patch these for you, so you don't have to worry about that. Compatibility is extremely important in this space. It has to look exactly like Windows Server AD for a lot of these applications to start moving to the cloud. High availability is important. A lot of our customers who spin up domain controllers in the cloud typically spin up a pair of domain controllers, so they're sort of resilient. If one of them were to go down, you still have a backup in the form of a secondary domain controller. We try to design the service to make sure that that high availability is offered to you out of the box. Auto-remediation is an interesting concept. A lot of time, IT admins spend a large amount of their effort trying to figure out what's going wrong with the domain controller, try to either reboot the domain controller, patch it, spin up other replica domain controllers, replace these DCs. Our goal here is to try and do a lot of these things using auto-remediation. If you've got replication issues, if you've got issues where syswall is not being shared, any of these other myriad issues that you have with domain controllers, we try to make it auto-remediated. Same thing with automatic backups. Things go wrong, stuff gets deleted accidentally. We want to make sure that we have automatic backups so that your domain controllers are snapped at different points in time, and you have the option of actually going back to one of these backups in the event of a disaster or if you need to essentially recover something. And then finally, the service needs to be cost effective. And we've tried for most scenarios to avoid the need for any complicated networking in the form of VPN gateways or express route connections. You might still need this for some more sophisticated network infrastructure, but we've tried to make the simple basic setup not require anything complicated on the networking front. So with that, I'd like to introduce you to Azure AD Domain Services. And this slide will walk you through what it looks like for a customer who has absolutely no on-premises AD presence. Once we walk through this, we'll talk about customers who have on-premises AD and see how this model extends to customers who have hybrid identity or have AD on-premises. So the concept is really simple. You've got an Azure AD tenant. If you're a cloud-only customer or you're setting up a tenant for a dev test environment, you've got an Azure AD directory. You create users in that directory using the Azure AD UI or PowerShell. You create groups, and then you also have passwords for these users stored within that Azure AD tenant. We've designed Azure AD Domain Services to take this information from your Azure AD tenant and project it into a virtual network of your choice. So you get to select what VNet you'd like to project the service onto. And then what happens is that you have domain controllers that appear on these VNets. So there's two IP addresses on your VNet at which you have domain controllers, again, gives you high availability, and gives you all of the surface area or the protocol surface area of a domain controller. What that means is you can now take your virtual machines and domain join them to that domain. You can configure basic group policy on that domain, push out group policy to all of these machines. Your admins can sign into your domain join VMs using their admin passwords. No more need to have separate admin accounts on each of your VMs. And then you can do things like NTLM and Kerberos authentication. So if you have apps that use service accounts, you can deploy these applications and they just keep using Windows Integrated Auth against that domain. So we essentially now have this notion of a managed domain. And here's really what a managed domain gives you. All of your domain controllers are patched automatically. We try to do patch management in an orchestrated manner. So both of your domain controllers are not taken offline. We patch them in a staggered fashion. We ensure that the patch is applied to just one domain controller, ensure that it got patched successfully, in which case we continue to patch your second domain controller and ensure you have availability. If there's an issue with the patch, we roll it back or ensure we spin up a new instance so you still have that high availability for your domain. Not having to worry about patches for critical infrastructure like DCs is a fairly good benefit there. The domain itself is secured and locked down, so by default, you do not have domain admin or enterprise admin privileges. We at Microsoft also do not have them by default. These are all encrypted and stored, and it's only pulled out when we need to do something on your domain. In a JIT fashion, which is completely audited. The domain itself is locked down in compliance with all of Microsoft's best practices. So if you see any of our guidelines around how to secure your on-premises AD, all of these domains are compatible with that. We leverage the fault resilience of Azure, so we ensure that these domain controllers are deployed on different sets of hardware. So if there's a rack failure or a switch failure or even a data center level failure in Azure, within that Azure region, both of your domain controllers wouldn't be impacted. Either one of them would be available at that point in time. The service is designed for automatic health detection and remediation. So our service is going to make sure that your domain controllers are healthy and functional. So there's constant heart beating of your domain controllers. We check to see if syswall is shared on your domain controllers, if there's any replication issues, if pings are happening correctly, if LDAP access to your domain is working, and so on and so forth. And really the thought here is to automatically detect issues and try to remediate those so you don't have to call in with a broken domain. Automatic backups for disaster recovery. We try and take a backup every day and make sure that the last 8 or so backups are available for you. In the event of a disaster, if an entire Azure region were to go down, we now have the ability to re-spin up your domain from that backup. Note that all of your users, groups, and passwords are stored in your Azure AD tenant, which itself is triple replicated, so you have geo-redundancy and you have that protection as well. It's really just your domain data that these backups cover. You do not need to monitor replication to your DCs, so you don't have to worry about DFSR, NTFRS. Well, hopefully you don't have to worry about NTFRS even on premises now. But AD replication, DFS replication, these are things that we take care of automatically for you. And then finally, it's a highly available domain, so we try and guarantee that at least one domain controller is available for your domain at all points in time. So we previously saw what it looked like for an organization that has a cloud-only tenant. If you've got on-premises AD, the way we've kind of designed it is that it uses Azure AD Connect, which is a tool that you already use today if you're deploying Office 365 or any SaaS applications. We've taught Azure AD Connect to synchronize all the credentials that are required for domain authentication. So the credential hashes that are required for NTLM, Kerberos, all of those credentials are synchronized along with your directory data up to Azure AD. And then we have an automatic sync with your Azure AD tenant. So every time you change a password on premises, you change group memberships, you change attributes of a user account, all of it flows all the way through to your managed domain in Azure AD Domain Services. It's really simple to deploy. If you're a cloud-only tenant, you have absolutely nothing additional to deploy. You simply turn on the service and start using it. If you're a synced customer and are syncing your identities from on-premises, it leverages Azure AD Connect. So again, nothing additional to deploy. You simply start using Azure AD Connect, and it starts working with domain services. So we've tried to make it really simple to deploy on that front. With that, here's what it looks like for a sync tenant. You've got your on-premises tenant on the bottom right corner here. You've got your directory, you've got identities, users, groups, and passwords that are being synchronized up to the cloud to Azure AD using Azure AD Connect. We leverage the exact same sync channel. You do not have to worry about replicating with your on-premises AD. Now, once this information reaches Azure AD, it is then projected onto a domain, onto a VNet of your choice. And it is kept in sync continuously from that point onwards. So if you were to change users, groups, or passwords in Azure AD, or on an on-premises domain, all of those changes will keep synchronizing to your managed domain in Azure AD Domain Services. The benefit of that is users don't have to remember a different set of credentials. They can just use their corporate credentials. You have the same group memberships that you've defined in Azure AD or on-premises. You have the same set of user attributes that you've defined on-premises that can be used in this domain. With that, I sort of wanted to pause for a bit. If there are any questions, please do feel free to come to these mics here. I'd be happy to take a couple of questions. I'm going to proceed to the features that are available, but if you do have questions, please feel free to go ahead and ask them. All right, we have a question.
Hi, so in that synced model where you have your on-premise active domain controllers and you have the cloud AD service, how does it handle FISMO roles? So maybe you had like a disaster on-premise, and now you have just your cloud AD. What are the next steps?
Great question. So it's important to know that the domain that we spin up in the cloud is not an extension of your on-premises domain. It's not a replica of your on-premises domain. It only uses information from your on-premises domain in terms of users, groups, passwords. It's a completely different domain, has its own FISMO roles, has its own domain controller notions. You could choose to name it the same as your on-premises domain, but it's not the same domain. All right, great question. Thank you. So question here. It's a great question. The question's about the delegated administration capabilities. So today what we do is you have a delegated group called ADDC administrators, and they get to do a bunch of operations on their domain, such as pushing group policy, configuring DNS, or being able to do things like being admins on any machine that is joined to the domain. We do not have more granular notions of RBAC or delegation right now. It's something that we're looking to enable in the future. But for now, we have that one delegated admin notion. Question.
Hi. So I just recently migrated a VNet from ASM to ARM and found out that our the Azure Active Directory domain services that I had set up in ASM no longer worked in ARM. Is there a timeline for when that's going to be available? And a general availability timeline as well?
Yes. I'm glad you asked that question, and let's just get that out of the way. That's the most frequently asked question. So yes, we do not support ARM-based virtual networks today. There is a workaround where you can enable Azure AD domain services in a classic or an ASM VNet and hook it up to an ARM-based VNet using VNet peering. We're aware that a lot of customers want support for ARM-based VNets, and we're working on it right now. It will most likely happen towards the end of this year, probably early next year. In terms of GA, we're right now in preview, public preview. We expect the service to be GA within a couple of months, latest. So I'd expect by October, early November timeframe is kind of when we'd be GA. So thank you. It's good to get those questions out of the way. I do have slides on that, but we'll talk about it as well. Question, sir.
So when I set up a Active Directory sync from my domain to Office 365, everything becomes read-only. Will this happen if I do this?
Yes. So the way it kind of works is this service requires your credential hashes to synchronize along with the other information. So I'm not sure if you synchronize credentials today or passwords today, but you can choose to go ahead and do it read-only. The only difference there is that you cannot modify those attributes in Azure AD, but I'm sure you're aware of that. The service would still work. It would still take all of your information from on-premises, sync it to Azure AD, and go ahead and sync it to this domain as well.
I mean a situation where I only have ADDS and Office 365. Will my Office 365 objects become read-only due to this sync?
No, this does not impact your Office 365 in any way. Okay. It simply uses what's available in your tenant. So it's completely different from that notion. It uses the same information but does not impact your O365. Question, sir?
What's the licensing? Like, is this just included with VNet premium?
Great question. How do you charge for the service? What's the licensing? It's available on all Azure AD tiers, whether it's free, basic, or premium. It's a pay-as-you-go service, so very similar to compute. You'd pay based on the number of hours you use the service. It's not tied to any premium EMS or other SKUs. It's available for all SKUs of AD. All right, so let's quickly go on to some of the features we have here. We've tried to make it really simple to deploy so you don't have additional software to deploy. It's a couple of clicks. I'll walk you through a demo next and show you how to set up a domain. It's a single managed domain per Azure AD directory. We also offer high availability and fault tolerance, and we've designed it such that it can handle Azure-level outages, basically in conjunction with the best practices that the Azure infrastructure services team has. We talked about automatic health detection and remediation. Most common issues are automatically detected and remediated. We've designed the sync between Azure AD and domain services to be automatic, so you don't have to worry about that sync. Any issues there are flagged to Microsoft, and we try to resolve those for you. Auto sync from your Azure AD tenant means you can use the same passwords, the same users, the same group memberships you have on premises in this service as well, which means that if you have an application that took dependencies on specific group memberships, specific accounts on premises, it just keeps working in the cloud. I should mention also that on premises SIDs, your primary user SID and your primary group SID, are synchronized to Azure AD and are set in the SID history of this domain. Now, that feature essentially allows you to lift and shift your applications without having to re-ACL them, because the same ACLs that you've configured on-premises are now recognized in this cloud domain as well. That's, again, something that's handled automatically under the covers. The domain is designed to offer domain join, the exact same notions that you use on your Windows machines, where you can essentially go to your computer, join the device to the domain. Everything that you've been using for the last 10 years, or 10, 20 years, essentially works just the same. You can go ahead and domain join Linux machines as well. We've worked with Red Hat. They have capabilities to domain join Linux VMs as well. So you can use it for all of your IIS workloads there. We offer LDAP bind and LDAP read. This domain is a little different from your on-premises Windows Server domain. It's really designed to be more read-only than read-write for now. So don't expect to be able to write to user objects, user attributes, or group memberships. That's not supported right now. So if you've got applications that modify the directory or write to these objects, those won't quite work right now. We're working to add LDAP write support in a subsequent update. We also have secure LDAP. So if you want to use your Azure AD tenant from the internet or from another cloud or from your on-premises or from an application that's not deployed inside an Azure VNet, you can do so over the internet. When you configure the service, you can upload a certificate, either a self-signed cert or a cert that you got from a public CA or your enterprise CA. And what we do is ensure that your domain controllers are configured to offer secure LDAP over the internet if you choose to, or within the VNet, using that certificate. So it's a way to get LDAP over SSL, which is a secure way to connect to your domain either within the virtual network by default or if you choose to from the internet as well. You can create custom OUs. So any member of the AAD DC Administrators Delegated Group can go ahead and create custom OUs. You can choose to have your Azure VMs then appear under these custom OUs. You can have your web servers separate from your database servers and so on and so forth. Any member of the AAD DC admins group also gets full DNS administration privileges. The service has a DNS server along with it for that domain. So you can go ahead and create A records, CNAME records, create forwarders, all of that stuff using Windows Server DNS administration tools. So again, the same admin interfaces, the same MMC tools that you've been used to using for a couple of decades, you can go ahead and use that against this domain as well. And then finally, the service gives you basic group policy. So you have a built-in GPO for the user's container and one for the computer's container. You can go ahead and customize the GPO on each of those containers and use it to push out group policy for all of your VMs that are joined to this managed domain. It's a great way to manage virtual machines, Azure VMs, by ensuring you can control what runs on those VMs and applying any of your security policies or your baselines to those virtual machines, ensuring they're compliant with those policies. Let's do a quick demo here. I'll show you how to turn on domain services for your domain. So what I have here is the Azure Classic portal, or the old portal. We're not yet in the new portal, but we expect to be by end of this year. So here I'm actually on the Active Directory node in this portal. You'll notice that I've selected the Active Directory node. I can see all of my directories. Now, obviously, a regular customer environment might have maybe one or two domains, but I keep doing a lot of demos, so I have a lot of directories here. So you'd expect to see just one or two here in your environment. I'm going to actually navigate to the demo directory here. And in this directory, I'm going to go and click on Configure. So once this loads, you'll notice that there's a new section called Domain Services, and I'm going to zoom into that in just a bit. So this is a new section called Domain Services, and this is where you enable Active Directory Domain Services for your domain. Now, we'll get to how to enable the service, but I wanted to quickly show you what it looks like in your directory. So if you go to Groups, what I've done here is created a group called AAD DC Administrators. This is the delegated group that I was telling you about. Any user that you add to this group has admin rights on your domain in terms of the ability to manage DNS, the ability to configure group policy, be added as an admin on all of your domain joined VMs, and so on. So I'm going to quickly click on this group, and you'll notice that I have a user called Bob Admin. Pretty clear what he does. But Bob Admin is this user who I've added to the AAD DC Admins group inside of my AAD tenant. Now, the other thing I wanted to show you was also my virtual networks tab here. So I'm going to be using my demo VNet here. If you click on Configure, I've created a basic basic VNet. There are no DNS servers on this VNet, and I'm going to just use this VNet to enable Azure AD domain services. So we are now ready to go ahead and enable domain services. let's go back to this directory, my demo directory. Let's click on it. Click on the Configure tab, as I mentioned, and go back to where you can enable domain services. So we're going to scroll down to domain services here. And I'm going to toggle this to yes. And that's going to help us enable Azure AD domain services, right? So I toggle this to yes. And it immediately asks me what DNS domain name I would like to have for my directory. This dropdown is going to pick all of the verified domains or the unverified domains inside of your Azure AD tenant. You'll notice in this case, it's picked the basic built-in default domain name for my directory. But I can go ahead and free type here. I can simply call it mydemodomain.com. Right, so it's a free type text box. You can go ahead and create a domain with the same name as your on-premises domain. I'd caution that both these domains should not be on the same network so clients don't get confused. But you can go ahead and create a domain with any name here. The second question it asks me is what VNet I'd like to expose the service in. It's going to show you only ASM or classic-based VNets, and it's going to show you only VNets in regions that the service supports. Over time, we expect to broaden the reach of the service, but it'll pretty much get to almost every region by end of this year. So I'm going to select the demo VNet and hit save. Now, at this point in time, it's going to go ahead and enable domain services for my domain. This is a fairly long operation. It takes about 20 minutes for the first domain controller for your domain to be provisioned, another 20 minutes before the second domain controller is available. And so in the interest of time, I'm going to switch to a domain or an environment where I've already set it up. So I'm here in my preview directory. And you'll notice that I've actually got domain services enabled for this directory. So we've toggled this to yes. I've created a domain called contoso100.com. And I've enabled it in my preview VNet. So this is a separate environment that I created in the background, and I've enabled it in my Contoso preview VNet. I've called it contoso100.com. The other thing you notice is a couple of IP addresses, 10.0.0.5 and 4. These are the IP addresses on that VNet at which domain services is available. So you have two DCs that are available at each of these IP addresses. What you can do then is take those IP addresses, go back to your VNet, and set those IP addresses as the DNS servers on that VNet. Now, when any of your machines are spun up into that VNet, they're going to automatically find the domain because the DNS resolution is offered by this service. It also allows you to essentially domain join machines to connect to those DCs using remote server administration tools and so on and so forth. The other thing you'll notice on this page is the option to configure a secure LDAP certificate. Now, it's a fairly simple experience. You click on this button, you upload a certificate, and you provide a password to decrypt the certificate. From that point onwards, the certificate is going to be taken and put onto your domain controllers so that you can connect to those domain controllers using the public version of that cert. This feature gives you LDAP over SSL, or LDAP-S, as it's commonly known. It's a way to connect to your directory. The other thing you'll notice is that I've enabled this directory to be connected to over the internet. It's a fairly simple yes-no kind of option. By default, we toggle it to no, so the domain is not available on the internet, but it's an option for you as well. So that's pretty much all I had on the demo front. Let's quickly switch back to the deck here and talk about availability of the service itself. So right now, we're available in multiple regions across the world. We're available in a couple of regions across the US, Europe. We have East Asia and Southeast Asia, and then we also have support for Australia. What's going to happen in the next month or so is we're going to add support for Canada, Brazil, India, and I think there's one more region, Japan. So that should basically get us to all the public Azure regions that are available. I should note that we are not yet available in the federal government cloud. So if you have any of you are government customers or require us to be available in that cloud, please do let us know. At this point in time, if there are any questions, I'm happy to take those. Yes, sir. Yes. Yes. So the question is, it's only available in ASM VNets. What if I have to expose the service in a resource manager VNet? So I do have a slide on that, but you're right. The simple way to do that is using the VNet peering feature. So you enable the service in a classic VNet, and you peer it with an ASM with an ARM-based VNet. At that point onwards, your workloads can see the domain. Questions?
Real quick. Thank you for the talk. Question on Mac devices. Do you support Mac devices joining to the domain?
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm completely lost here.
He's in the middle, I think.
Oh, that's you. Sorry. Yeah. So it should look exactly the same as Windows Server AD. I personally haven't joined a Mac device to the domain, but it's definitely a supported scenario in the sense that there's nothing different from an on-premises domain. We're going to go back and try it ourselves, but just to be honest with you, I haven't tried it myself. It should work. There's nothing restrictive in terms of only allow specific device categories. It should work.
And another quick follow-up. What happens if you delete a user in AD? I mean, obviously, today you can use a recycle bin and restore that user. Does that same functionality still exist?
So that's a great question. So users cannot be deleted from within the domain itself. It's read-only. If you delete a user from your Azure AD tenant, that propagates into a deletion in the domain itself. We don't yet have recycle bin. And it's also fairly complicated because you've deleted the user inside of Azure AD, so we can't have it rehydrate. But you could go ahead and create the user again in Azure AD, and it'll show up back in the domain. We might enable recycle bin in the future, but we're trying to work through some of those challenges, which is how do we reconcile that with your Azure AD domain.
Hi, Mahesh, on your left.
Yes, sir.
Sorry if I missed this, but related to DNS, is this leveraging Azure DNS, or is it DNS on those domain controllers?
Great question. So it's not leveraging Azure DNS right now. It's DNS on those domain controllers. And it also has the management surface of a Windows Server DNS. So you can use the DNS administration tools like the DNS admin console to go ahead and administer it.
And then likewise, we can do the replication from those DNS servers to our on-premise.
Sure.
Awesome. Thanks. Yeah.
Good morning. A quick question. We're implementing LAPS and also MIM on-premise to help with privileged access management. Is that something that is supported in this, or is that something maybe in the future this would be supported?
So we're looking to enable support for Azure PIM, or Privileged Identity Management, in the future. But right now, no, that's not really. There's nothing special we do there to support those scenarios.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. Thanks. Yes, sir.
What are the future plans for group policy?
I do have a slide on future plans for group policy. I'd love to get your input on that. But today what we have is a single built-in GPO for the users and computers container. We hope to make that a little more bring-your-own-GP-like, so a notion where you can create your own custom GPs, assign those to specific OUs. And another feature we've heard from a lot of customers is the ability to use WMI filtering. So you can figure out how to target those group policies. So all of those are kind of in the hopper right now. What we're trying to see is which of those are important. We don't want to go and create the same kind of overly permissive but sometimes messy infrastructure that a lot of people have on premises. So we want to see if we can simplify it and make it a little more cloud ready, if you may. I'm using some of these words loosely, but try and make it simplified in the cloud. So I'd love to get input on that. I'm going to hang out here after the session, so I'd love to talk to you about that as well.
Thank you.
Yes, sir.
So a couple quick questions. You mentioned SID replicated up. What about on-prem SID history?
That's a great question. So right now, we only replicate the on-prem primary SID and the group SID. We do not replicate the SID history. Is that something that you... I mean, do you have a lot of stuff in the SID history there?
Unfortunately, yes.
I see. Okay.
And then the other question is, what about group policy extensions? Does it pull those from, say, the GP management tool, the client, or does it use a central store and limit it?
So it does not synchronize your on-premises group policy up to the cloud. We only synchronize users, groups, SID history, or SIDs, and passwords. We do not synchronize group policy today. I myself have not tried a group policy extension, loading it in the GPMC console against this domain. So I really can't comment on that, but we'll try that out. Yeah. Thanks for your question.
Hi. I have an RDS environment where I wanted my Azure AD users to be able to use the built-in MFA functions in Azure Directory. Is that something that will be added, or will I still require a separate RADIUS server?
So you can use the service with your remote desktop environments, but it does not really support MFA in that notion. So when you sign into those VMs, it does not do MFA right there. There are ways to do that using the app proxy, where you can essentially publish your remote desktop sessions and then use the app proxy. So you basically get a token, you perform MFA, and then you get into the VM. We're looking into possibly supporting that on the domain, but I really don't have a timeline for that. We don't hear of it too often. So anyway, thanks for the question.
How would you look at supporting multiple subscriptions?
Great question. So how would you use multiple subscriptions with the service? Really, the only way to do that is to connect the VNets. And so you can connect a VNet in which you've got the service to multiple subscriptions. I believe the VPN gateway option or the site-to-site VPN option supports cross-subscription. I also believe that the VNet peering option supports that as long as you're within the same Azure region. So really, that's the way to expose that domain out to multiple subscriptions. All right. Thank you.
Yes, I have also two questions. First, regarding ADFS, we have a federated domain. Is it possible to enable domain services also for federated domains? Or are there any side effects?
Great question. So unfortunately today, no, because we require passwords to synchronize to the cloud. But we're working on a feature called a managed resource domain, hopefully next year, early next year. And the thought there is that you have a domain to which you can join all of your VMs and have a trust relationship back to your on-premises AD. So your identity doesn't leave your on-premises setup. Users get authenticated there. But you can still use the service with your Azure VMs and with other workloads. So today, no, it does not work. It requires passwords to be synchronized, but we're working on that.
Okay. Second question regarding domain admin rights. When we have to manage, for example, service principal names, how can we do that?
Great question. So you do not have the domain admin or enterprise admin rights on this domain that's held by Microsoft. But you do have the ability to create custom OUs. So when you create a custom OU, you get full permissions on that OU. Those objects reside within the service and are not synchronized back to Azure AD. So you can use that to create objects, create service principles, set do not expire attributes, and change spins on it, and so on and so forth. So I'd probably point you to that option. Thanks for the question.
Yes,
sir.
Okay, so let's say I join a legacy client to a domain that is exposed in this way. Let's say a Windows 7 client. I take it that would not in any way give some kind of single sign-on towards Office 365 and such, although it is the same account as it is using older protocols, right?
That is right. So I'll talk about the client workstation scenario. We don't really recommend that. We recommend people use Azure AD Join. Technically, there's nothing limiting it. If you set up a connection from your on-premises network to this VNet, it should work. But one of the problems with that is that you're at the mercy of that connection. If that Express Route or VPN connection were to go down, you essentially cannot authenticate to the domain. Now, that said, if you're going to decommission your on-premises domain and use this in the cloud, I'd really suggest you move to Windows 10 and Azure AD Join, because that directly connects you to the cloud and you're not at the mercy of a VPN connection. That's typically been our recommendation. If you have a different scenario, I'd love to chat with you offline, you know, once the session's over.
Yes, okay, thank you.
Thank you. Yes, sir.
Two quick questions. So for a cloud only organization, I can see some of the benefit for this, I guess, but what if that cloud only organization needed to expand into like more group policy and I wanted to actually spin up true domain controller IaaS instances? Is there any transition plan to go from directory services to or domain services to or, you know, traditional DC in infrastructure?
That's a great question. So what if you want to go to the IaaS domain? At that point in time, think of it as just migrating from one domain to another. So typically what that means is that you would have to unjoin your machines and rejoin them to the IaaS domain. The bigger problem might be getting your users, groups, and passwords synchronized to that domain, which might involve some custom scripting where you'd have to get all of the users from your Azure AD tenant and then use AD PowerShell commandlets to go and rehydrate those in your IaaS VMs. Not an automated process, but it's still possible because you can take all of that stuff and move it. There's a lot of articles on TechNet around how to migrate from one domain to another, and that's probably the best option. You might have to set up SID history as well, just to make sure that your ACLs work, you know, across the move.
Okay, but is the domain information exposed in this service?
Oh yeah, absolutely. The service exposes, you know, you can essentially use Windows Server PowerShell commandlets, the exact same PowerShell commandlets you use for AD to query the domain, get all of that information. You can use the AD Admin Center tool to connect to this domain and get a list of your users and groups. It exposes LDAP as well. So pick your interface, you can pretty much copy everything you'd like. Yeah.
Okay, and my last question slash comment is, can you just touch on some use cases?
Absolutely. So we'll probably do on-premises
domains.
Yes. Okay. We'll probably do a couple more questions, and I'll move on to use cases and deployment scenarios.
Okay.
Yes.
How about business-to-business scenarios for external users? Is it supported?
So with B2B customers today, it's not supported. We're looking to do something about it. The key problem we have in a B2B tenant, an Azure AD B2B tenant, is that we do not have credential hashes or passwords for those external users. So we have no way to authenticate those users in a domain. We might try and support this by using domain trusts in the future, but I really don't know because we've not yet gotten to designing that feature. So today, these users show up as external accounts or shadow principals in your directory, but they have no way to be able to be authenticated because we don't have passwords for them. So we're still trying to figure out what we can do with B2B tenants.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for the question.
Two questions.
Yes, sir.
For LDAPs over the internet, is the IP static or dynamic? And if it's dynamic, is there a DNS record that's updated automatically?
It's a static IP, and so you can basically go ahead and use that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then for the UPNs, do they get a UPN using the domain name that you set up in the service, or are alternate UPNs synced?
The UPNs are synced from your Azure AD tenant, so whatever UPN you've set on your Azure AD tenant for the user are synchronized in, so you can use those.
Okay.
Yeah. And UPN is a recommended way to sign into those domains. Sometimes the SAM account name cannot be reliably generated because you might have an overly long UPN prefix, and so we're not able to squish it into the 20-character limit that a SAM account name has. So UPNs are a good way to sign in.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks. So we're going to quickly move on here. And some of these questions have probably already been answered. So if you want to use your managed domain in a different classic VNet, the best option is probably going to be VNet peering because it does not have some of the bandwidth limitations or some of the restrictions that a site-to-site VPN connection has. But think of this model as where you've got a managed domain exposed in one classic VNet, and then you can peer it with multiple other VNets and expose the domain to all of these workloads running in different VNets. That exact same model works if you want to use a resource manager VNet as well. You can expose the service in a classic VNet and go ahead and connect it to an ARM VNet or multiple ARM VNets as well using VNet peering. The third thing, a lot of our customers use network security groups or NSGs on their VNets, so a recommendation would be to enable domain services in its own dedicated subnet within that VNet and then exclude that from your NSG. A problem we've seen with some of our preview deployments is that customers tend to lock out the service, lock out our ability to service those domain controllers, to update them, to patch them, to monitor them, and also to synchronize data in from your Azure AD tenant. So our typical recommendation here is to have a separate subnet for your Azure AD domain services domain, and then go ahead and apply NSGs to all of your other workloads, excluding this domain. With that, I'll quickly touch upon a few deployment scenarios for domain services. The canonical main scenario that we have is streamlined management of Azure VMs. So you do not have to have local admin passwords for each of your VMs, worry about password complexity, worry about passwords never expiring, or having to change them on all of your VMs. You can simply use your domain credentials to sign into your Azure VMs. And all of that happens because your credentials synchronize all the way up into the managed domain. So the key use case here is to be able to use your Windows and Linux IaaS VMs, domain join them, and then also use group policy to push out policies to your Windows VMs as well. The second scenario is you can lift and shift applications that rely on LDAP bind. A lot of organizations have built applications for managing their partners or vendors or external company identities where you've got a web page that collects credentials for a user and then does an LDAP bind against the directory to authenticate those users. It's a great example of an application you can lift and shift to the cloud. You do not need to maintain that in your DMZ or your separate environment anymore. You can simply use the cloud for that. Create all of these user accounts in either a cloud-only tenant or a tenant that's synchronized with your on-premises AD, and let these users authenticate to apps that use LDAP bind. The third category of applications is apps that use Windows integrated auth with like a service account. And so what that means is an app that needs to make a service-to-service call. The app itself is running as a service account. You might configure its password to never expire, or you might configure its password lifetime policies on your domain differently. But the key thing here is that the app uses Windows integrated auth to authenticate itself as a service account and then might call into other applications or services. Again, a great example of an app that you can lift and shift to the cloud using Azure AD domain services. The fourth one is we're seeing a lot of customers lift and shift their remote desktop or their VDI environments to the cloud. And this gives you a way by which you can domain join those instances, again, use group policy to manage them, and so on. I will caution there's a known issue here, which is with terminal services licensing. Terminal services licensing requires computer accounts to be added into like a local TS licensing group. Unfortunately, we don't support that on a managed domain yet. So the recommendation from the remote desktop team is to not use TS licensing to manage those licenses, to account for them separately. But we're also working to figure out if there's a way by which we can fix the TS licensing component to work against an ADDS domain so it does not do this anymore. Doesn't block you from deploying, but just something that you should probably be aware of. The last deployment scenario is setting up a secure Hadoop cluster. There is a session on this, BA326. But the goal here is that you can spin up a Hadoop cluster running on Linux and then Kerberize that cluster by connecting it to an Azure AD domain services managed domain. The way you do that is to set up the domain in a classic VNet. Go ahead and spin up your Hadoop cluster in an ARM-based VNet, and then use VNet peering to connect the two of them. There's a session, BA326, that walks through all of these details and tells you exactly how to go about doing that. It's a great way by which you can spin up a secured Hadoop cluster. Now, with that, the key question we get asked a lot is, when should I use a DIY environment where I spin up my own DCs versus using the service? Now, we want to be very, very clear and very upfront. It's not designed for all scenarios yet. It's something that we keep evolving the service. We'll start handling more and more scenarios. But the key thing is, some of the differences to keep in mind, the service is designed to be managed. So it does take care of a lot of things that you'd have to account for when you spin up your own domain. You do not have to worry about patching, monitoring, taking backups, ensuring availability. Those are things we take care of for you. It's a secured and locked down deployment. By no means does that mean you cannot secure or lock down your own environment. It's just something that we take care of for you. In a DIY deployment, it's something you need to worry about. It's something that you need to set up yourself. There's a built-in DNS server which is offered as a managed service to you. Again, if you set up a DIY environment, you do have your own DNS server that ships on Windows Server as well. The key difference between this and a DIY domain is you do not have domain admin or enterprise admin privileges. So even if those admin accounts are compromised, they really can't do much on an ADDS managed domain. They don't have the same sweeping rights that you'd have on a Windows Server domain. Again, you can use privileged identity management to mitigate that if you're doing a DIY environment. Domain join, domain authentication, and custom OU structures work pretty much the same across the board. Schema extensions is another important one. A lot of customers have cases where they've extended their on-premises AD. They might have added a few new attributes to the user object, something to the group object, maybe employee ID, department ID, or a bunch of other extension attributes. We do not support schema extensions in the service yet. We're looking into supporting that. I'd love to know if any of you have scenarios that require schema extensions. So today, if you have schema extensions, you should probably use a DIY domain. It's better suited for your environment. LDAP read and secure LDAP work pretty much the same. Secure LDAP is a little easier to manage because you simply upload a certificate and we take care of ensuring the certificate is installed on your DCs. If the certificate expires, you get a warning, and then you can go ahead and upload a new certificate and go ahead and fix up your LDAP environment. LDAP write is another important difference. LDAP write is not offered on this domain. And so if you have scenarios, you have applications that need to modify the user object or need to do other changes on the directory, that might be a scenario to consider a DIY domain. And then finally, a geo-distributed environment. So if you've got an organization where you need to have domain services in the US, something in the in Europe, and maybe something else in Asia, that's not a scenario that we support right now. We can only expose the service onto one VNet. Again, something we're working on. But if you have a scenario that spans many Azure regions, you're probably better off setting up your own domain. So I hope this kind of clarifies exactly when you'd consider setting up your own domain versus using the service. If you have specific input on features that we should prioritize before to help you move your workloads to the cloud, please do let us know. But our intention is that over time, we'll try and narrow down this gap and make sure it is it's pretty much consistent across the board. What about client workstations? It's very tempting to set up a connection back to your on-premises network and then join all of your client workstations to the cloud. It should work technically. There's nothing that really blocks it. However, we recommend that if you're using Windows 10 devices that you use Azure AD Join, because those are better suited for internet scenarios or scenarios where your end users are mobile. They might be working in office one day, they might be on the road the next, they might be connecting from cafes or from home pretty often as well. With an environment like this where you're using domain join with your client workstations, it requires that connectivity to the Azure VNet in order for a lot of domain operations to happen. And so that's why it's probably not the best choice for a lot of client workstation scenarios as well. The key difference between Azure AD Join and a domain join is obviously that the devices would be managed using Intune or an MDM for Azure AD Join and would be managed using group policy for AD. So you do have to account for some of the differences in capabilities between the two of them. But at least on the Windows side, we're constantly working on narrowing that gap and making sure that MDM management is a lot more effective. Finally, when it comes to service, the goal here is to keep evolving, to keep making changes on a daily basis and keep pushing those out and getting better. This is some of the feedback that we've heard from our customers, and I'd love to understand which of these are important to you. Either by a show of hands, we could do that, or you could swing by and chat with me after the session. Azure Resource Manager support is probably the top thing we've heard from our customers. It's something we're working on, and we hope to have it by early next year. It's kind of what we're working on. That would give you support for PowerShell-based automation. It would also allow you to create ARM templates that spin up VMs, domain join them, create ADDS instances, and so on. So that's kind of what we're looking at when it comes to ARM support. It will give you a lot of the automation capabilities of the ARM platform. Support for the new Azure portal, that's again something that's in progress. We hope by end of this year, early next year, we'll have the same experience that you have, same simplicity, the same two-click experience in the new portal as well. And so that would round out a lot of our Azure AD capabilities moving to the new portal. Resource forest deployments is something we touched upon. This would add support for organizations that do not want to synchronize passwords to the cloud, but still want to use domain services, manage domains. So you have the ability to spin up a managed domain in the cloud and then possibly set up a trust relationship back to your account forest on-premises so users get authenticated on-premises. It's a good option for a lot of organizations that are sync tenants and that are federated tenants and do not want to synchronize passwords to the cloud. And then finally, sophisticated group policies where you can create your own custom GPOs. You can assign GPOs to specific OUs, possibly use WMI filtering for better targeting of GPs, and so on and so forth. I've not had a whole lot of customers ask me about this, but if you've got scenarios around that, I'd love to hear about it as well. So at this point, that's pretty much all for this session. I'm happy to take questions right now. I'll also hang around for a bit after the session as well. I'd like to thank you all for your time. And I hope that this has been a valuable experience or at least something that gets you started on your journey to lift and shift applications to the cloud. We do have a couple of sessions. I want to make a plug for a session on ADFS and Windows Server AD capabilities that's happening same time tomorrow. That's the session BRK3074. Sam's going to be running that session and basically talk about what's new in Windows Server AD on ADFS and ADDS. So thank you so much for your time.